I would like to open with a little story which is told in Vrindavan. A story which makes us a little bit aware of the relationship between Krishna and his parents Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. The Gaga Sanghita has given one little description where you can see how there's always a little tension emerging, a question emerging, which makes the relationship between Krishna and his devotees extremely sweet and special. It's one day when the Brijbasis come to Nanda and Yashoda and say, "We can't believe that Krishna is your son, because you are fair-skinned and Krishna is black. How can a black boy come from fair-skinned parents?" I think they didn't say this is genealogically not possible, but they said it's not possible. Further, we have seen that your boy has lifted effortlessly the Govardhan hill with one finger, but Nanda Maharaj, his father, who should be stronger than his child, his offspring, can hardly move a little rock, what to speak of lift it and hold it for an extended time. So this type of talk always worries Nanda and Yashoda. And Krishna also, who is lost in Vrindavan in the love of this relationship to his parents, is also often sometimes worried by this relation, by this. See, whenever love becomes something which is not reflected upon any longer, when love becomes an item which is just so absolutely regulated and ruled and sure, it stagnates and freezes like water which doesn't move any longer. It becomes stale. So in Vrindavan, the love is always moving. There's always a question attached to it. Like in the paramour relationship between Krishna and the gopis, where's the moral in this? People asked, how can Krishna meet the married wives of others? Is it really divine and so on? There's always this tension which brings up further and further and deeper levels of love for only its own sake and not for the sake of moral or laws or whatever. It's just love in its form, which is beyond all other conclusions. So once the cowherd boys come to Yashoda and say, some come to Krishna and say, "Krishna, we don't think you are the son of Yashoda. Because look at you, you are so absolutely dark, and she is so absolutely fair-skinned, and your father as well." And then Krishna begins to cry. On that day, God, who is questioned if he is the son of the Nanda Tanuya and the Yashoda Gopal, he feels hurt. He feels, how could I exist if it's true and I'm not the son? So, at the evening, Mother Yashoda waits for Krishna in the afternoon, but Krishna doesn't come. Then he asked the other cowherd boys, "Where is my Kanaya?" They say, "We don't know. We had a little argument." And then Krishna began to sob and ran away from our midst, and since that time we have not seen him. For 3 days, Krishna is found missing. No one finds Krishna until finally a little boy comes to Yashoda and says, Ma, when I was going down that one path where I never go, I heard some sound from a tree. Maybe it's Krishna. I didn't dare to come close. And then Yashoda, highly alarmed, follows the little boy and comes close to a tree and hears the sound. She's crying, intense sobbing. And she goes around the tree, and in a hollow of a tree, she finds Krishna crying since 3 days and nights without stop about the possibility that maybe it's true. If I am black and Yashoda is not, so then maybe I'm not the son. And so Yashoda comes to Krishna and says, Kanai. And Krishna turns around to the hollow of the tree. Doesn't look at his mother. He's just so absolutely upset. Kanai, what is wrong? And Krishna continues to sob. Nothing. Kanai, come now. You must be hungry. Then Krishna turns around, flings his arm around the neck of Yashoda and says, My friends say I'm not your son and not Nanda Maharaj's son. Yashoda pets him like a mother. Don't worry, come with me. And she carries him home and said, Why do they say like this? Then they say, because I'm so black. Oh, said Yashoda, these boys just simply don't know. You were born in a black night. The first cow milk which you drank was from a black cow. And because you always live in the eyes of your mother and the other gopis, the eyes which are surrounded by a line of mascara, your body is also black. They don't know the science of life. They are little boys, little ignorant about life's secret. And Krishna feels so absolutely relieved. However, the problem is not over. Narada Muni reminds Krishna, O Supreme Lord, you have come with a certain mission to annihilate the demons. You should now think of this mission, and you should also consider Vasudeva and Devaki's plight, who always long for you. So you please think about this mission. And Krishna begins to think this painful and unthinkable thought that he should leave his parents and the gopis and his friends in Vrindavan to start a mission of exterminating the evil of the world. He doesn't want to confront the demons in the pleasure gardens of Vrindavan, just like no one wants to make war in his own home, you know, and shoot the machine gun in his home. No, this will destroy everything. So Krishna then leaves for Mathura and kills the evil king Kamsa and resides in Mathura. So it is here where this last picture starts, this last obeisances start. I will read. I should say, so Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys are all outside of Mathura. They have a camp. And they wait for Krishna to say goodbye to the Mathura Vasis and return with them to Vrindavan, of course. So here we start. Atyasvo gamano vyaya rakshita brajanayaka prasida muhur ashlesha Nanda Sambhashanakula. So Krishna comes one morning to Nanda Maharaj, who's just waiting, when is my boy coming? And Sanatana Goswami describes, you saved the king of Braj by the pretense that you would come home that very day or the next. You were shaken as you spoke with Nanda, embracing him again and again. We find Krishna embracing Nanda Maharaj because he knows he has to fulfill his mission outside of Vrindavan, and he has to somehow send his father home to Vrindavan with his friends, and somehow there will be the gopis and his own mother waiting for Nanda Maharaj to come, and they will find out Krishna doesn't sit next to Nanda Maharaj in the ox car. He knows they will inspect all ox carts. Where is Krishna? And will not find him. And therefore, he shakes as he speaks to Nanda a lie which he doesn't, which is the only way. I will come. If it is a lie or not, we will inspect a little later. Your various clever attempts to speak with poor Nanda only made him cry all the more. And when you profusely embraced all the cowherds, you brought them to tears of grief. You know, all of them, my dear devotees, they all know something is cooking. Something is in the air. Krishna says he's coming, but we somehow feel he is not coming. Otherwise, why would our bodies shake? And otherwise, why would he say, I'm coming, and then he breaks down in uncontrollable grief? The next verse. Muhur muyat patat vrida nanda santvana katara vasolankara kupyadi dana marita nandahe. Then Krishna becomes anxious to console the elderly Nanda, who has by now fainted and who has. And Krishna falls to the ground again and again, having to say goodbye to those he loves most. And then he offers them gifts such as clothing, ornaments, and metalware. But by this, he drives them to the verge of death. You know, Krishna came and said, I'm coming, Father, in one day or the next. And his father faints when he hears this, thinking, what if he doesn't come? And then Krishna, to make good, gives him ornaments and metalware. And Nanda Maharaj said, we don't want your ornaments and metalware. We want you. Krishna, we did the wrong things. You made all the cowherd men sorrow for you, sobbing with loud cries of, they cry, alas, alas. You sprinkled Nanda with water and doing whatever else you had to do, you brought him back to life. Please be satisfied with me. So, Nanda, Sanatana Goswami, it will go further, but I will give you a little pause for reflection. Sanatana Goswami now will drive us into separation from Krishna. He will describe how the cowherd men and Nanda Maharaj with great pain leave the outskirts of Mathura, and how Krishna goes another way. And he will leave his reader with this tension that the devotee is here and Krishna is there. And there is a distance between them, which can be overcome only when the heart becomes enlivened with these feelings of separation. Let us continue. You won Nanda's confidence with your promise, I will come back quickly, Father. Maybe that's Krishna coming in modern times. No, he would come differently, not with such noisy technical failure as a helicopter. So he tells, I will come back. In other words, Nanda Maharaj knows, oh no, that means he will stay in Mathura and he will, ah. And he says, please keep me always by your side, Father. And Krishna, you made Yashoda's misery still greater with your well-intentioned message. The message was, Mother Yashoda, I will come back very soon. And what? What are these words, I will come back? Why didn't you come back with your father? You always talk very cleverly, Gopal. So now Nanda Maharaj is on the road. Again and again, Nanda turned back and drenched you with his tears. He runs back. No. And as he left, you restored to the poor Vrajavasis their life as by pretending to follow. In other words, the Vrajavasis are now walking towards Vrindavan, and Krishna walks with them. Then he turns around, then they look in his direction, and he motions, go to Vrindavan, please go to Vrindavan. And they can't move, so Krishna again moves in their direction. Then they move a little, then Krishna goes back. And finally, the last verse. You sent the gopis, your own ornaments, and your promise. And you held back a flood of tears from your lotus eyes. Please be satisfied with me. My dear devotees, this is how the last obeisances ends in Krishna Lila Stava. And it is a meditation which a devotee keeps in his heart. It's the pining of the devotee for his Lord and the pining of the Lord for his devotee. Yes, we are also apparently separated in time and in space from Krishna. But Krishna wants to be with us, with his devotees, and the devotees wants to be with Krishna. And if the devotee learns the lesson of Vipralamba or bhajan in Vipralamba, chanting with feelings of separation, then the two, that is his heart and Krishna, will meet and there will be union. This is the teachings of Krishna Lila Stava, and it is very, very moving. I want to now request you to listen very attentively, even maybe meditatively, to a summary of this picture. Then I want you to pay your most humble obeisances to Krishna and pray any mantra which you, any prayer, either in your personal words or when you are embarrassed to speak personal words out loud, then you can do it in this case in the mind. Or you can say a mantra. I will say the mantra of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which I suggest to you also, if you wish. Ayinanda tanuya kinkarang patitang mam vishame bhavam budo. O son of Nanda, somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Please be cautiously merciful upon me and lift me up and bring me to your lotus feet. So here again, in summary, the verses of Sanatana Goswami, because if you meditate on Krishna Lila Stava, you will read these verses and you will remember obviously something of the verses, and then when it comes down to pay your obeisances, that what you have read will live in you, and when you are down on the ground and you are thinking of Krishna, the lover of his devotees, you will feel some connection when you pay obeisances to him. So here, please concentrate. Krishna comes out, leaves Mathura, and goes to the camp where Nanda Maharaj waits for him anxiously, and he embraces him again and again and shakes. And then he makes clever attempts to speak to poor Nanda, but he confuses him more and more, and his father has tears of grief. Then Krishna tries to console Nanda by offering him clothing, ornaments, and metalware, but his father is becoming very anxious and agitated by these presents. This means you will leave me only when one leaves someone or when one sees someone anew after some time does one give presents. Oh. And all the cowherd men are very, very agitated and upset. Krishna says again to Nanda, I come back and tell Yashoda, mother, Ma, I come back. And here, he says, take some ornaments. Krishna takes his own ornaments off his body. Give these ornaments to my beloved gopis. So now the separation takes place. Krishna walks with the Vrajbasis, but finally he turns and they go to Vrindavan. Please offer your obeisances now to the Lord of Love, who wants to increase our love by these activities. Please pay in the direction of Govardhan, and I will give you a sign when it's over. When you are ready, you can return back to your seats. I surely don't want to end our seminar in Vrindavan with this mood. And therefore, I have good news for you at the end. This subject is the greatest subject of meditation because it increases our love for Krishna. To see how the devotees want their Krishna and how Krishna loves the devotees. I remember once there was a yatra, Radhanath Swami's yatra, and Jagatarini was asked to speak. And Jagatarini came to this drama that Krishna had left the inhabitants of Vrindavan. The trees lost all their leaves out of distress. The cows just kept looking in the direction of Mathura, and they didn't eat anything anymore after they kept on holding the last grass which Krishna had put in their mouth. They didn't want to accept any other non-Krishna grass, or grass which was not fed to them by Krishna. And, you know, all this was there. And then Jagadharini had to speak on this, and she just sobbed. She was, her soft Vaishnava heart was moved. And then I decided to soothe Jagatarini's heart with an information, and today I will read this information. It's a very, very, very esoteric knowledge. And I will read now from Sharata Darshini how Krishna managed to leave the Vrijabasis, the Nanda Maharaj, and stay in Mathura, and how at the same time he came along with Nanda Maharaj and went home to Vrindavan. How Krishna does this paradoxical thing. I'm reading from the 10th canto, chapter 45, from the purport, it's a long purport, to the text 25. Nanda Maharaj mounted a golden chariot. He goes on a golden chariot and went off to Vrindavan. Now listen to this. This will get complicated. By the power of Yoga Maya, at that time, one Nanda Maharaj separated from Krishna and went to Braj alone, while the other Nanda Maharaj, invisible to the other, remained in Krishna's association in Braj. In this same way, all the Braj gopis, gopas and their animals expanded into two separate manifestations. One set was immersed in an ocean of suffering with Nanda, in separation from Krishna, and the other set was immersed in an ocean of bliss along with Nanda in the association with Krishna. They existed simultaneously in Braj without seeing or contacting each other. So, in this Braj, there is lamentation going on, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? And at the same time, by these strong feelings of separation, there is, oh, we are with Krishna, we are with Krishna, we are with Krishna. This is a mystery which those who are not experienced in bhajan will never understand. You can only enter this mystery if you enter bhajan, and Krishna Lila Stava could help you. It's something which cannot exist in the dualistic understanding of the brain. However, to help us to understand how Krishna was simultaneously separated and unified with the Vrajbasis, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives us the example of how of Dwaraka. In Dwaraka, you remember Krishna visited the 16,108 palaces, and in one palace, he saw Devaki eating with Krishna. In another palace, he saw Devaki thinking, Krishna went out, when is he coming home? He must be hungry. In another palace, he saw Devaki doing something else with Krishna. Yeah. This is similar to how Narada Muni saw so many separate manifestations of Krishna in Dwaraka. In one place, Devaki was happily caring for Krishna and feeding him, and simultaneously at another place, Devaki was suffering in separation from Krishna, lamenting, "Alas, alas, why has my son, who went out to hunt, not returned yet? He must be pained by hunger and thirst." The Lagu Bhagavatamrita says this. This is the last complicated thing. Just make a special strain. You can understand. You're not too dull. How astonishing that though two forms were present in the same place at once, each form was unaware of the other form and did not contact it. This is a great, great secret. It's a secret of love, that in divine love you can be separated from Krishna, and the more you are feeling separated from Krishna, the more you are connected with Krishna in your heart. I know Ananda Gopal looks at me as if this was the most paradoxical thing he ever heard. I hope you will not lose all your faith now. Or you're straining to concentrate. This is, you're straining. It's not a shocked glance in utter disbelief, announcing your leaving of the Krishna conscious movement. It's not that. Good. Very happy. Very relieved. My dear devotees, on the path of bhajan, on the path of chanting, so many secrets are waiting for you. And I want to request you to to really begin to walk through towards these secrets in a very careful way, and that careful way is paying obeisances according to the method of Krishna Lila Stava. If you combine thinking of Krishna with praying to Krishna and then paying your obeisances to Krishna, you will very quickly become imbued with the treasures of bhakti. It will very quickly soften your heart, because this is experiential. It's no longer in the a mental exercise. It is something very, very holistic and very profound. With this, I have ended this session a little earlier. We have still a little bit time. It's only it's 20 minutes before our end. So I wanted to open the forum for a few careful questions and answers. First of all, I would like to ask you, is the process clear to you now, Krishna Lila Stava? Yes? No? Yes. One moment. I will take questions in a moment. I will first question my audience. So you read the obeisances. You read through it, you chant through it, and then you make the obeisances in one of four ways, by meditating about Krishna, and then you will wait what comes in your heart. Hare Krishna. Good. So there are questions by now? Open. Your good name, please, Prabhu. Mahahari Prabhu, yes.
Three things we've been learning, obeisances, prayer, meditation. Is one more important than the other two?
Your question is clear. Thank you very much. Please sit comfortably. In philosophy, you can give different answers which depend on the perspective which you take. It has always been said that the processes of Shravan and Kirtan, that is, glorification and hearing, are the most important of the devotional processes. The reason here is that the living entity in this world is called Maya Hata Jiva, that is, a jiva which is killed by the influence of Maya. What it means is you're not actually dead, but you are not spiritually alive, and in this sense you are dead. So in that sleeping comatose situation, the process of hearing about Krishna and chanting his name can reach the soul the easiest, in the easiest way, and therefore they are the prime processes of the nine forms of devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said of these two, the process of chanting the holy name is the most important. So this vocalization. So someone could make a point in answering your question that yes, of the three processes which you have heard, that chanting prayers is the most important. But I will take another perspective, a perspective which has become increasingly my own perspective in my own spiritual life, and my in my preaching outside of ISKCON and inside of ISKCON. It is this, that if you do that, there are two Prabhupada used to say devotee means the mind. You have to control your mind and bring your mind to the process. If you do mindless devotional service, you're for all practical purposes absent. I'm trying to find someone of you who is asleep at the moment to use him as an example. I can't see anyone. But imagine someone would be asleep. Whatever goes on in this tent is not within his experience, because he is absent-minded. He dreams something else. He's not with us. He is here in the tent, but at the same time, because he's absent-minded, he dreams, he's not here. So, in devotional service, to be present to what you do with your mind is very, very important. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says the whole purpose of devotional service is to always think of Krishna, never forget him. All the other rules are embodied in these principles. So, in answering your question, in here, in using the Krishna Lila Stava as a manual for your bhajan, I would say present-mindedness or mindfulness to the practice is to be given the first place. If you do something mindless, the effect is not so much there. This is one of my contentions with the present state of spirituality in our movement. I feel very strongly the need to bring devotees more present to what they're doing, so that they are more satisfied and also more spiritual and don't need to take shelter in things which cannot offer them shelter, like politics or materialism in its many disguises and so on. It's this realization which makes me a member of the retreat culture in ISKCON, and which makes me travel around the world like crazy for these japa shops, japa workshops or japa retreats, because I feel it needs to be added to our culture very much. I really feel that Krishna, that Prabhupada's revelation, there's everything is there if we are present with it, if we understand and apply it. So this mindfulness is important. There are many statements in Narottamdas writes that smaranam, or remembering, is the life of the mind. When you stop thinking and meditating, your mind is dead. Hare Krishna. And we know such a day. We just mechanically go through the motions, and our thoughts are not with Krishna, and we really feel not good at the end of the day, and then we need to take shelter in some sweets, or when we are in the West, in some meaningless videos, and think of 16 rounds is something of the past, and sex is something of the present. Everything turns around when our mind gets dead, and there is no enlivened thought of Krishna. So, I would like to use this, I would like to answer from this perspective, but one could take other perspectives in answering your well-posed question. Is there another question, please? Danuda Swami, please give him the microphone.
Your realizations are very inspiring, and they influence a certain practice and action based on them. So I'd like to ask your personal realization on how you maintain that type of inspiration that you get in the association with the sadhu, so it doesn't become just like a fever where it kind of rises and then goes after some time, after the initial influence you're separated from.
You must find out a practice which keeps the enthusiasm alive, which you have awakened. You must, so to say, keep the inspiration and nourish the inspiration. So, we are kept alive and nourished in our body by good food, but in our mind and our heart, We are kept alive and nourished by a continuous contact with, I will now say it very theoretically, with the divine. To keep the inspiration alive which a sadhu has kindled within us, we need a constant practice of making contact, getting into divine contact, and not being satisfied if this doesn't happen. We must open, in other words, our heart, which has been opened by the sadhu, but which closes again like a flower. We must have some practice which opens our heart so that we can be enlivened and enthusiastic and and transfer our consciousness from the material level to the spiritual level of Krishna consciousness. How can you open your heart? Once Gaur Govinda Maharaj came to Heidelberg and he gave a lecture which I have not forgotten, where he said, I was in Africa. And we were all interested. Africa? Tell something? Yes, I was in Africa. And I wanted to tell the Africans how they can open their heart for Krishna, how they can cry for Krishna. So I was thinking, well, how did he do this to the Africans? And he said, I asked the Africans, when do you cry? The Africans said, well, at a funeral, when some other person cries, then we usually cry. That does open the heart. So then Maharaj said that this is how you can remain enlivened. When you open your heart, you have to be next to the sadhus who cry for Krishna, who have an open heart for Krishna. And I never forget this. He always used to say this. And then I thought in my years, but how do you do this when there is no sadhu around, just like Dhanuda Maharaj is asking? When the sadhu is there, the fever is high of enthusiasm, and then it goes down. Well, you must stay close to the sadhus. And the best way I find out for me is I sing these wonderful songs. I have so many songbooks. Therefore, I was so worried when my songbook yesterday was stolen. One of my many. It's very important for me to just pray the prayers and the songs of the acharyas and see how the feelings which they have open my own heart. Have you ever been in a condolence meeting? Maharaj, yes. Condolence, is it an English word? Condolence? What? Condolence meeting. Someone starts and then he begins to talk about the qualities of the departed god brother, and you have already made a vow, this time I don't cry. I mean, I just can't cry every time I come to this meeting, so, and so on. And then another person starts and talks about this quality and that quality, and then he cracks up and the tears come, and you go like, it won't happen to me. It won't, not this time, not this, this. I'm absolutely sure. And then another starts, and then, boom, it happens. The floodgate goes open, and then you also cry. So, the same happens when you read in these wonderful prayer books of Narottam Das Thakur, weeping and weeping, I roll on the ground and I'm praying, Radha and Krishna, just once show your mercy to me. And okay, this was the first song. I won't become affected, says your mind. Then you go to the second song, and then the third, and then it gets you, Dhanuda Swami. Oh, yes, I also think, what am I doing here? Why is my life so meaningless? And why am I so stone-hearted? And then it gets to you. So as a daily practice, I think we should do something which opens our heart, and it differs from person to person. Some persons do this in deity worship. They do that, they worship their Giriraj, and then they hang their Gunja berry around Giriraj, which represents for Radharani, and then they are present in this and come into this. And for intellectuals, they read some amazing philosophical point of Jiva Goswami, and then go back to the Bhagavatam and they read Prabhupada's purport and they find out, wow, I didn't know he wrote this. And then they are touched. Somehow find a practice which touches your heart or polish your old practice so that it can again reach through the layers and touch the heart. That is my answer. We have to open our heart open to Krishna in prayer or while chanting and so on, and enliven our practice, give life to it. As long as it's mechanical, yeah, it's better than nothing, but it won't keep us enlivened and won't help us advance. My personal feeling about this with sadhu. Now comes a highly controversial answer. Listen carefully. You can make politics about it if you wish. A lot of talk has been a lot of discussion had been given about sadhus, and which sadhus are able to touch our hearts and which sadhus are not. Sometimes this has been discussed controversially. One sadhu has been pitched almost like a boxer against another sadhu, and I find this a very disturbing advertisement in a boxing arena where there is no boxing in spirituality. There is no, this is not done. Krishna works through many devotees and inspires devotees through many devotees. But I have found something which really made a profound influence in my life. Jagadananda writes that it is very difficult to meet or find a sadhu, a very powerful sadhu. Therefore the Lord, understanding this dilemma, has personally appeared as Gauranga Mahaprabhu in Navadvip, where he is acting as a sadhu and a guru. That is someone who, for all times, where he reaches our heart. So, in my own spiritual life, I have discovered, again, the need of my contact to Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And I can only recommend a book where I feel Mahaprabhu just dances from the pages. It's of course, I'm speaking of an additional book now. Chaitanya Charitamrita will always be a very treasured book on Gauranga Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Chandramrita has this very devotional language of Prabodhananda Sarasvati Thakur. Thousands of millions of sadhanas, he writes, have remained fruitless to irrigate the desert of my heart. Next line. Fool, fool, fool! Why do you lament like this? Have you never heard the name Gauranga? The verse, in other words, says, yes, we are not able to irrigate our desert heart, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can do the mystical wonder. It is a very, very interesting language and very spiritually provocative language. Good. One last question. Yes.
I'm going to talk from my limited experience. I have a question of the importance of Mangal Arati and the importance of having a daily sadhana early in the morning. If you can just talk about your realizations of how to improve one's Mangal Arti.
How to improve one's Mangal Arti. You mean attendance of the Mangal Arti, get out of bed, or how to make the Mangal Arti the best?
How to make it the best. Yeah. Yep. The other isn't as much of a problem.
When you do prayers, Sangsara Davana, doing the Mangal Arati, it is good if you know about the meaning of the prayers. If you are a new devotee, it's good to take a prayer book and follow the meaning. If you are an old devotee, it's also good to do this because you might have forgotten. So that's one thing. And then, as you approach the deities to sing their glories, you can address the deities. Hare, here is Radha. Krishna, here is Krishna. And be present-minded in the practice. And it's also often said that the pujari who offers the items like the lamp and the water is acting as a representative of the assembled devotees. So you can follow with your eyes and with your mood the movements of your representative on the altar, your man on the altar or your woman on the altar, that is the pujari, and you can be in his mentally in his role. You can also offer another this lamps, because that is what it means to have a representative. He does something which represents you. That means you must be present in the same things which he does. Otherwise, he would do something which you don't do or which you don't mean. So, no, that is very good. Mangal Arti. Prabhupada said, if you come for 14 years every day to the Mangal Arti, every word you speak will be the truth. Hare Krishna. So these three are my recommendations. I thank all of you very much. May you be happy in Krishna consciousness. This is not the last lecture in our series. The last comes tomorrow, when we will turn to one obeisance of Sanatana Goswami, which is so much describing our own situation. It describes it's an obeisance to Lord Krishna's mercy, which Sanatana Goswami makes. And it's really amazing what he finds, how he finds out the many ways in which Krishna has given his mercy to him. All right, so thank you very much. Radhe, Radhe. And, oh, I'm really feeling a little bit. Tomorrow is our theater day. And of course, all the presentations will go on tomorrow, as far as I know. And then the day after tomorrow, Govardhan Retreat Part 2 starts. That is to apply things outside of the retreat. All the best. Hare Krishna.